Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. Low-carbon infrastructure projects that rely on proven technologies are often overlooked as too early stage or lacking scale to attract infrastructure investors. KHASMA Capital's name, that's spelled K-H-A-S-M-A Capital, was derived from the Greek root, chasma, spelled C-H-A-S-M-A, meaning chasm or gap, to reflect the company's mission to bridge the divide between available capital and the urgent needs of climate-critical projects. Josh Kaufman, CEO and co-founder at KHASMA Capital, is my guest in today's podcast, and we will discuss his firm's approach to solving the funding gap in the missing middle by investing in two sectors, circular economy and emerging energy transition technologies. These are industries with tremendous potential, but high early stage capital requirements. KHASMA Capital works with project developers to de-risk opportunities, attract large-scale funding, and successfully reach commercialization. Hello, Josh, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Josh, we're going to jump right in with KHASMA Capital's experience, which says that investors fund a company's commercialization life cycle in three stages. Stage one is research and development. Stage two is early deployment, which is also the missing middle stage. And stage three is broad adoption. How does using development capital to fund early deployment, the missing middle, increase the opportunity for broad adoption?
Yeah, definitely appreciate it. So we think about this problem in terms of what are the financing sources available for this. So in the first stage, research and development, that's traditionally venture capital, angel investors, grants, and so on. In the third phase, in the broad adoption, that's traditional real asset investors, infrastructure investors, debt, project finance groups who are willing to finance things that are low risk but proven. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do you get from one to three?
Right.
And obviously, so there's a number in between there. That's number two. That's where we are, the missing middle and the early deployment. And the question is, why is there a gap between those two things? And it's kind of fundamentally a question of what do investors look for when they're making an investment? So if you rewind to the Benjamin Graham days and what it makes a traditional good investment, things like positive cash flow, or at least positive revenue, downside protection, proven management teams, minimal binary risks that can destroy the company, significant growth prospects, defensible moats, and ideally minimal future capital requirements, because that prevents dilution and increases returns to shareholders. Well, in number two, sometimes you almost have none of those things, like not even some. Now, venture investors, sometimes they'll sacrifice some of the first things, right? So they might invest in something that doesn't yet have positive cash flow and doesn't yet have downside protection, but they're willing to do it if there's defensible moats and minimal future capital required. Conversely, the real assets community might do the opposite. They'll invest in a project where there's assets and there's cash flow, but they don't necessarily need huge growth prospects. Well, when we are doing this project development, you don't have any of those yet. And so what that means is that the company is transitioning from being a typical venture-backed company that's developing a business to a project company that's developing a project. The skill set is different. The expertise are different. And what the investment profile represents is different. And so there isn't a capital markets to serve that middle function. So that's what we do. And we think it's important because, broadly speaking, we believe the climate crisis is real. And we think we need more low carbon infrastructure to address this problem. And so we see this gap in the capital markets that's getting stuck. You have a lot of VC funds in the phase one that don't know how to get to phase three. You have a lot of infrastructure dollars in phase three that aren't seeing enough attractive projects to pull those things in phase one through. And so we're trying to bridge those two.
I see. So what you're about, what Chasma Capital is about, is bridging this market gap. And what opportunities for innovation and growth do you see emerging from your firm's success so far?
Yeah, that's right. So we're trying to bridge this. And again, we think we're different than a traditional VC or a traditional real asset investor. The way that we invest, it's like our uses of capital are for SG&A and for a lot of paying for the third-party costs that are required to build a project. A lot of that is engineering. If someone wants to go out, it's similar to building a building. If someone wants to build a project and people say, how much does it cost? Well, the first step is you kind of get a general sense for what are comparable projects that are built. But then you have to pay an engineering firm to do a lot of design work, spend a lot of time figuring out how much concrete's needed, how much piping is needed, quote some things, what is the insurance going to cost on construction? That costs millions and millions of dollars. And so a lot of these groups don't have the money to do that. And so that's what we fund. And we think we're well positioned to do this for two reasons. Number one is simply from our mandate. There's a lot of groups in the real assets community that by their mandate, they don't want to get involved in this piece called the development piece. Why is that? It just takes too long for them. There's still binary risks. They might have hundreds of millions of dollars under management. They're incentivized to put those hundreds of millions of dollars out the door quickly and then raise the next fund. They don't want to give someone $3 million and hope that in 2 years, a project will come along that works. So they say, come back to us when it's ready. So that's our mandate. Number two is our approach. And so we're different than venture investors who traditionally invest in a more diverse portfolio. And it's a bit of a power law. One or two of the deals might work well. The others might not work well at all. And just the one or two winners outweigh the losers. The real assets investor is the opposite. They need almost all of their deals to work and don't want any capital loss. That puts us kind of in between. We think about it that we need about two-thirds of our deals to work. And in order to do that, we have to spend a lot of time on diligence. And in order to do diligence properly, we need the right expertise to do project development. So our team is a lot of engineers and project developers, as well as finance people like myself. So we have to understand the financial aspect, the technical aspect, and the project development aspect. And we are unique in the way in our approach versus other investors who invest the check sizes that we do.
I see. So what you're really looking at is within a company's business model, you're prioritizing different things, if I understand you correctly, from what other capital investment firms do. But what part of a firm's business model are you zeroing in on with your investment criteria?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the first would be sector. And so because we think of ourselves as a bridge to the real asset community, we want to make sure the sector is something that the real asset community is ready to invest in. And that might be different from like a deep tech venture investor who thinks about how to transmit electricity in new ways and really futuristic concepts. We talk to our infrastructure partners and we understand what sectors they're in because we don't want to build a bridge to nowhere. You want someone to be on the other side. So right now, you mentioned we're in circular economy and emerging energy transition. There's a lot of things within those. We currently invest in waste upcycling and alternative fuels and carbon reduction. And we're researching other sectors like long duration energy storage and textile recycling and mineral recovery. That's number one. Number two is how proven is the technology? And again, infrastructure investors want proven technology, and that means so do we. We use the technology readiness level scale, which is a 1 through 9 metric originally created by NASA. 1 is a concept, 9 is its proven technology. And obviously each number in between is how proven is it. We invest at 7 and above, meaning there's real operating data in the same operating parameters as the project that they want to build. we're willing to take some scale up risk. That's the difference between the 7 and the 9, if we feel comfortable doing it. So those two filters get rid of a lot of projects that we see, proven technologies in a sector that we want. The third is we want some sort of project definition. We're not looking to back people at the very early stages who just have a concept. And that generally means there's main factors like, where is your project going to be? What are you going to use as the inputs? And who are you going to sell the outputs to? The groups that have some sort of project definition not only show that it's the right phase for us to invest in, but also show that they know how to advance a project. Because certainly the management team is going to be important and believing that they can get the project to the finish line. So if once you start to talk about where they are in those phases, you start to understand how capable they are in actually executing the project. And then after that, we just put on our infrastructure investor lens and look at all the other things. So, you know, we talked about technology. Again, what are the inputs, the outputs, the management team? We interview them. We do references. What are the site? What permits do they need? How confident are we in getting those permits? Not all of that has to be done, but we're ending up going to make a bet that we think we will be able to check all of those boxes eventually and then get it to the infra community.
Great. Well, listen now, let's zero in on the management team a little bit more. You've mentioned them twice in the last few sentences. How important is diversity of experience in a management team of a company that you consider for investment? And you also have a practice where you will add expertise to management teams from outside, I would assume, to strengthen that team when it's necessary. Can you give us an example? I don't mean names, but an example of a company that you've done that with.
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the day, we're backing teams. And so for sure, you know, the quality of the team is important. And these are all very complex projects. Again, people might have been good at the early stage, but then it takes a different set of skills to get it to the later stage. They're also not common skill sets. There just aren't that many people who have developed a biofuel facility in the same way there are people who have developed a commercial real estate building. So we understand that not every management team is going to have all of the capabilities required. So what we look for is as many of those required capabilities as possible. Do they have project development experience doing something very similar? Do they have familiarity with similar technologies? Do they have a commercial track record to be able to negotiate agreements? Have they excelled at other things that they've done in their past and demonstrated excellence? There's a lot of soft components we look for, like an attention to detail, an openness to feedback, because this is a winding road. It's never a straight path. Is there transparent, proactive communication because we're going to be partners here and we don't like surprises? Do they have focus? Do they have drive? So we look at those things as well. But the tangible skill sets are diverse. And when we augment management teams, sometimes we require the team hire someone into the business with specific capabilities that we think they know. Or sometimes we will essentially allocate someone from our team to help them in a temporary way until they get to the point that they can hire someone. That can be specific project development expertise. It can be specific feedstock expertise. It can be technical expertise, and it can just vary depending on the stage of the company.
Okay, now let's, for an example of your work, let's zero in on a company in the green energy sector, and that is Castle Rock Green Energy. Tell our followers about Casma Capital's work with this firm, and why and how it has made a positive difference, and what the Casma Capital team has learned from this experience.
Yeah, so Castle Rock is one of our most recent deals. We did a $9 million commitment to them. They turn woody biomass into renewable heating oil. The first project is in Maine. So again, our money goes towards paying salaries and doing the engineering work that's currently underway. We know it's value add because there aren't other groups like us doing this. And we're currently in discussions with the financing partners who would fund the construction of the plant. And they are precluded from funding development capital. So they are all waiting for us to finish our process and then bringing it back to them and demonstrating, here's exactly where we know the feedstock is coming from. Here's the CapEx. Here's the engineering work. And so that's what we're working on. This is an important project because in the Northeast, it's gas constrained. And so a lot of people are still using liquid fuel for heating, hospitals and schools and whatnot. And making it from wood is a way to do that in a renewable way as opposed to using fossil fuels. There's also, we're looking into the possibility of selling the product into oil refineries to reduce the carbon intensity of oil processing. And similarly, we're just deeply involved in this. It's beyond just the investment. We have augmented the team and augmented the capabilities in this one in particular with experts who really know the woody biomass feedstock market in that region and have relationships with those parties there.
When you work with a company like this, how often are you finding yourself in a situation where you do have this follow-up work to do, and you may or may not have someone that you can put into a position with the company right away, and you perhaps have to go out and find the right person someplace else? Does that ever happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a learning process for all the parties involved to just make sure that all of us around the table are aligned in terms of what needs to be done. And yeah, sometimes it takes some time, but we have a network of people. We have a network of search firms that we can call on to augment teams in different ways. And sometimes it takes some time to get everybody aligned and to make sure that the team is well staffed.
Okay, good. Now, Josh, where online can followers of the Sustainable Finance Podcast go to learn more about Chasma Capital, and how can they get in touch with you with questions about the topics that we've discussed in today's episode?
Yeah, website's probably best. That's chasmacapital.com, and on there's a link that says contact us. So if you click that, then that'll come through and we can connect.
Okay, and how about any direct line to you, email or anything like that, that people can use if they want to have a conversation about a project or they want to pitch an idea to you?
Pitching an idea, the website is probably best to make sure it goes through our process. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me, Josh Kaufman, at Chasma Capital. But the website is generally the best way. That does come to me, and we'll just make sure we analyze it appropriately.
Great. Well, listen, thanks so much, Josh, for your time today. It's been very instructive to learn how Chasma Capital is moving through this kind of project work, and I'm really excited that you're doing it because, as you stated, it's needed very much, especially in clean energy and other sectors of the economy. I probably have a couple of companies I'd like to refer to you for possible funding as well. So anyway, thanks for the opportunity. And we want to make sure that if you have anything you'd like to link to our conversation, where people can do their own research in addition to what they hear from you and I in this conversation, send us any links that you think would be helpful for people to learn more about Chasma Capital and your process of funding projects in these areas. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the episode today, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast. I'm Paul Ellis, your host. Join us again next week for another episode.